Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring to you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Friday, December 6, 2019, and Dave is having a little bit of a late start here. He'll join us, but I'm going to go ahead and start with the precious metals today. The market report, and let's see, we have gold today down $15 as we can hear Dave approaching his microphone. We can hear all the bangs and clutters and everything that goes along with it, so please, my apologies, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go ahead and get to the gold prices. You have gold down $15 today at $1,461. And, of course, this is all due to the jobs report that came out today. Silver was down 36 cents at $16.68. Platinum was down $1 at $899. Palladium was up $1,883. You have the USDX today, of course, was stronger, 0.30 at 97.68, and crude oil was up 0.64 at 59.07. And the markets had the same kind of day to the upside due to the jobs report that we'll talk about here in just a second or two. You have the Dow up 336 points at 28,014. The NASDAQ was up 85 points at 8,656. The S&P was up 28 at 3,145. 10-year yield, 1.84%. That euro is still holding that 1.11. That hasn't budged the whole week. And you have all overseas markets stronger. Hong Kong was up over by 1%. London was up almost 1.5%. And I guess things are moving along quite nicely in the global markets. And what we have today is we have the government's non-farm payrolls that was up by 266,000, surging by that number, and the unemployment rate fell to 3.5%, and this is according to the Labor Department numbers that were released this morning. Now, these totals easily beat any of the Wall Street consensus and economists that were surveyed. Are you back, Dave?
I'm back.
All right, we heard you.
Hey!
We heard you.
Hello, ladies.
What an entrance.
Ta-da!
I was just talking about the non-farm payrolls that surged by 266,000, and the unemployment rate had fell to 3.5%. Now, these totals easily beat the Wall Street consensus. Of course, they were looking for about 187,000. And the decline in November's jobless rate came amid a corresponding 0.1% point drop in the labor force participation rate. So this is the jobs growth was the best since January's of 312,000 and well clear of the November 2018 total of 196,000. So while hopes already were up, much of that was based on the return of General Motors workers following a lengthy strike, Dave.
Well, that excuse me, that dynamic, the GM, the end of the GM strike, indeed boosted employment in motor vehicles and parts by 41,300, partly of the overall 54,000 employment gain in manufacturing. The vehicles and parts sector had fallen by roughly 43,000 in October. However, the job gains were spread among a multitude of sectors in November. Healthcare added 45,000 positions, leisure and hospitality increased by the same, professional business services, 31,000. Wage gains, also a touch better than expectations, or so says the government again. Average hourly earnings rose by 3.1%. year over year, while the average work week held steady at a little over 34 hours. Economists had been looking for wage gains of 3.0%. Now, a separate and more realistic gauge of unemployment that includes discouraged workers and the underemployed, those that have just stopped looking, was at 6.9%. Why on earth that isn't the headline inflation number? I don't know. It just continues to baffle me, Melody. I mean, we know why it isn't. You know, let's go for the best. But the best isn't accurate. I mean, it totally understates, always has, always will.
And I mean, and this isn't that's just the past couple of years that they've been doing this. They've been doing this for a very long time, you know, when it comes to the employment numbers and so forth. But what I found interesting is that the leisure and hospitality increased by so much, 45,000. You know, it's not like we're heading into this, you know, to the summer seasons, spring seasons. So where did that increase come from? I mean, we read reports earlier this week where we show tourists are leaving. I mean, they're not coming to New York City as much. They're going to the Asian market. So we're seeing a change in the hospitality and leisure area. It's an odd timing for December. For November, I should say. It's just to see that number grow by that amount. And then you have the, and healthcare is, you know, I mean, leisure and hospitality increased as much as the same as the healthcare. Healthcare, I get it. We're getting old. A lot of people are going into healthcare. I get that with the baby boomers and everything. And that's the number that'll probably sustain a lot of these employment reports coming out in the future, because that number will keep growing. And it will take up a lot of the slack from some of these other industries. But the most, I think, was that leisure and hospitality that I kind of scratched my head at. So we'll have to see what revisions are. And normally, Dave, I don't ever remember such a wide gap between the ADP numbers and government numbers. I mean, you know, maybe 50,000, you know, difference. Even 100.
Yeah. This
but we're talking 200.
Very unusual. And it just makes you wonder. I mean, there's no conspiracy necessarily going on. It just calls into question the reliability of the record of the surveys that underlie the compilation of these numbers that... you know, are they reliable? Is the government getting adequately accurate information from these companies and sectors? And, you know, that's why we have to look at these, not necessarily with a grain of salt, but with a serious critical eye. Because if you just take these at their face value, well, then I think we're missing out on a number of questions, one of which Melody just raised.
Yeah, and, you know, it should all make sense. And, you know, I questioned the last job report, when did they tally in all of the holiday seasonal hires? Because we've seen, you know, supposedly, if the online buying is picking up a majority of black, you know, they're increasing significantly when it comes to Black Friday and so forth, you wouldn't need to hire as many people anymore if they're doing online, or maybe you do. I don't know, but I think that the holiday shopping season accelerated. Retail companies only added, 2,000 net hires, Dave?
That's true. Just 2,000. Gains in general merchandise of 22,000 and motor vehicle and parts of 8,000 were offset by an 18,000 loss in clothing and clothing accessories. Mining also showed a loss of 7,000 positions. Now, excuse me, the job report just released comes amid a challenging year for the U.S. economy. Recession fears surged in late summer, early fall, and worries that a global slowdown would spread to the American shores. Right now, consumer sentiment remains surprisingly high. Spending remains resilient, and the stock market scales to new highs. The Fed meets next week, and officials have been clear that they plan no further rate changes unless conditions change significantly. And all this is to say, ladies and gentlemen, is hold on to your hats. The roller coaster ride of uncertainty continues unabated. And in the long run, remember, that's good for gold and silver.
Well, you know, again, it's all back to the trade deal with U.S. and China. There's talks that, you know, this economy is so great. You add on U.S. and China, if they close the deal, that, you know, it's going to boost everything even more so. Kudlow, the White, huh? What?
No, I'm just going to ask what your BFF is saying about that.
Yeah, well, you know, he says that the U.S. and China are close to a trade deal, but the administration is prepared to walk away if it doesn't get the terms they want. One of these days, they will come to a deal. And
no one's going to believe it.
Well, the thing of it is, it will make the stock market. So the timing is everything. You know, if the markets begin to go down, that's when they'll use it to close the deal. It's so orchestrated. It's all theatrics. This is everything that they do. It's everything is timed. Everything is for the benefit of any administration, not just this one, but all administrations. Kudlow said that the president said many times that the deal is no good if the assurances with respects of to preventing future thefts, if the enforcement procedure is no good. He has said, we will not go for it. We will walk away. The two countries are in talks to finalize the so-called Phase 1 trade deal as 15% tariffs and $165 billion in Chinese imports are set to kick in less than 10 days. Of course, the deal is close. It's probably even closer than in mid-November. Deputy-level meet again or met again. The reality is constructive talks, almost daily talks. Kudlow's beginning.
That's Kudlow talk.
Good grief. And there's no arbitrary deadlines, but the fact remains December 15th is a very important date with respects to a no-go or go on tariffs.
Well, Kudlow characterized these most recent talks as intense. And this is his words. I say intense because this is a very important matter. He added that there's so much at stake here when you go through the various categories. We can't afford, we must not permit any country, China or whomever, to willy-nilly steal our breakthroughs in technology and advanced microprocessing related to 5G. That's Kudlow talking. We'll talk a little bit more about 5G if we have time later on in the program. Yesterday, Trump said the trade talks with Beijing were going very well. He added that something could happen regarding those tariffs that are set to be imposed on the 15th. But added, they are not discussing that yet. Trump's comments came as the Wall Street Journal reported that the U.S. and China still haven't reached a consensus on the amount of agriculture goods that China would buy under a Phase 1 deal, although there is some newer news on that we will get to later in the program. Once again, Melody, the more things change, the more they remain the same.
Well, you know what, is this all about 5G? Is that why we have a Phase 1 and Phase 2, maybe even a Phase 3 deal? I mean, we don't know. We couldn't get the whole ball of wax, so now they're breaking it down in little sections just so we can get something heading into an election year.
Well, that actually is plausible. Mm. There's such a race going on behind the scenes. We've talked about it at some length a couple of months ago, but clearly what I continue to read anyway is that the competition mainly between China and the U.S. to get a foothold in 5G, particularly with respect to military intelligence, is so intense that it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit if that was part of our negotiating strategy and theirs as well.
Well, if it had that much impact on military, I can't imagine China would want to give up on anything unless we eventually share it with them. Why would you do that as a nation?
I don't know.
I mean, why would you give up something that would be so important to your military? I mean, wouldn't you, if you have the ability to control it, wouldn't you? I mean, as a leader of and I'm talking about any country. I mean, just like ours. I mean, if it's that important to military, we should be fighting for it. But so yeah, who gives up what?
I guess it depends on the perspective. I mean, it's part of this greater long-term dichotomy between China's growth in particular, their goals to be the dominant economic military force by 2050, and the growing question among the rest of the world, Russia aside, in terms of how are we going to view China as it continues to rise? As an enemy or as a mere competitor? And I think that's real important in a number of respects, and we don't want to get too far off the beaten track, but I think a lot of the tension that we see today between the two has a lot to do with growing pains, if you will. The fact that with China's rise, with the U.S.'s relative fall to some extent, and how we want to maintain, or how at least some aspects of our society want to maintain superiority in a number of different ways, not the least of which is military and communications. So anyway.
Yeah, but just real quick though, based on, you know, what you just said, knowing the government that China has, are they willing to, I mean, I can't imagine that they'd be willing to accept second place or third, you know, second place, I guess.
Well, Xi Jinping certainly doesn't want to.
Yeah, so it's not going to be over with the signing of a phase one trade deal. That I do know. I think the signing of a phase one trade deal is really to, I'm not quite sure, you know, when there's so much more involved in a trade agreement with China as a whole. I don't know. I guess it's a start, and that's something we haven't had before. It's a start. So, other in economic news today, we had the dollar. The dollar fell every day this week until today, notching a cumulative loss of around 1% since President Trump complained on Twitter about its strength and took aim at the two countries' weak currencies. And I didn't realize we were so close to break. We're going to finish that story up when we come back from this break. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The smart people today are buying gold. The smart ones are. And if you bought at a higher price, you can't become discouraged. I mean, we can be happy that these numbers are what they are. We can be happy that everybody, even though I don't believe they're real, but if you want to rejoice in it, rejoice in it. That's fine. But on the other hand, what's changed? And that's just, you know, as much as things change, they stay the same, just as Dave said. So again, ladies and gentlemen, don't get upset because you bought gold at a higher price. We're going there. It's just so often, you know, people fall into time frames and then the time frames don't work out to what you were anticipating. And be thankful that they have the ability to suppress, well, I shouldn't say the ability to suppress gold and silver, but I mean the ability to suppress the market corrections that I think we're going to face. And I listened a lot to CNBC today, Dave, and they were talking about, oh, this is telling us we're coming out of recession. Like, really? Really? And they did have one gentleman on there that pretty much, you know, did the information that we talk a lot about. And, you know, he was just a naysayer and all this. And, you know, they're crazy and, you know, the economy is great and so forth and whatnot. And yes, it absolutely is, you know, better. But you have people that are working two jobs. And the wage increase, really? Well, I could go back and look at a lot of other of our needs that have increased also. It's not keeping up with inflation. Their imaginary inflation might be. So, I mean, everything is just so distorted, Dave, that it just, we're on this path, ladies and gentlemen. And things have to happen. They have to fix our monetary system before things can truly, you know, get better. But anyway, we were talking about the dollar getting a little bit stronger today. It was weaker. It had fallen every day this week except today, and it has fallen about 1% since President Trump complained on Twitter about its strength and took aim at two countries with weak currencies. And even though the dollar rebounded a tad today, its decline will continue, eventually reducing the dollar's strength in 2020. We know what happens when the dollar weakens. With U.S. businesses continuing to complain, Trump has made it clear the currency strength is a major administration concern. He doesn't like a strong dollar. The only one that likes a strong dollar is Larry Kudlow. And we know President Trump wants a weaker dollar, and that's all good for gold. On Monday, he announced he would reimpose tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from Brazil and Argentina for presiding over a massive devaluation of their currencies. Argentina and Brazil are just two countries whose economies have been hurt by weakening. Have intervened to strengthen them. So President Trump's decision to target them signals to a number of strategists that several other countries could find themselves in the president's crosshairs, Dave.
Indeed. But currency intervention has been shown to be ineffective, unless, that is, it's coordinated between central banks. And that's even more unlikely to happen next year as it is this. What could really move the needle, a number of analysts are saying, is no drum roll needed. You know, a ceasefire in the U.S.-China trade war, or Trump holding off on instituting more tariffs on Chinese imports, again scheduled for December 15th. New tariffs have boosted the dollar in the past by prompting traders to sell out of so-called high beta currencies like the Australian and New Zealand dollar and emerging market currencies as well, and instead buy more U.S. dollars in search of safety. Other analysts say the dollar could also be weakened by outside factors. One, Lael Akoner of BNY Mellon says she expects European economic data to improve, bolstering the euro, and for emerging market currencies to rise against the dollar. The British pound, it's risen to its highest level since May against the dollar this week, and could go higher, a lot higher, if a Brexit deal is ever reached. The bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, with the U.S. economy poised to continue slowing next year, the economic difference between the U.S. and the rest of the world will decrease, which should lead to less appetite for the dollar. Did we say that's good for gold?
Well, you know, we're going to talk about countries that are moving away from the dollar to gold. This has been in the headlines a lot. But, you know, Dave, the Fed adds $72 billion to markets again. Their balance sheet moves to $4.07 trillion. Does that sound like a financial system that's healthy?
It sounds like it's a financial system that's in tip-top manipulation.
And, you know, it's totally being ignored.
To give the impression that it's healthy.
Yeah.
As opposed to being healthy.
I mean, it's just, but yet no one pays any attention to it. It doesn't matter. And, you know, what's interesting, though, Dave, about that is the market is beginning to accept it. It doesn't matter for the moment.
All these normals.
Well, you know, we have countries that are moving away from the dollar. And of course, we know we've talked about this regularly on this program about Russia and China, how they're moving away from the dollar. And but instead of buying other currencies, they are buying gold. We've previously reported central banks purchased a record of 374 tons worth about $15 billion of gold in the first half of the year. And this is the largest first half increase in the 19-year history of the World Gold Council. Now, this year's gold buying binge is the latest move by China and Russia and emerging countries like Turkey as they decouple themselves and the rest of the global financial system from the U.S. dollar. So, you know, that the status of the dollar as the world's funding currency is paramount to the U.S. position, not just in global financial markets, but in terms of its position as the world's major superpower.
Yeah, central banks have bought over 224 tons of gold in just the second quarter, Melody. It accounts for about 16% of total gold demand. Buying by central banks during the first 6 months of 2019 was 73% higher than a year earlier, with Turkey and Kazakhstan joining China and Russia as the four largest buyers. Little old Kazakhstan. Poland has more than doubled its gold holdings over the past 2 years. Overall, central banks are increasing from last year's pace when they set a record for gold buying that stretched back to the end of the gold standard in 1971. Since 2009, the People's Bank of China has been calling for a global move away from the dollar after the market turbulence caused by the U.S.-induced global financial crisis. The Chinese central bank renewed those calls in 2013 after that year's U.S. government shutdown, and it's been increasing those efforts ever since Donald Trump's election.
Well, you know, it's been about 2009 when the People's Bank of China had been calling for the global move away from the dollar, you know, after, you know, the U.S.-induced global financial crisis happened. And the Chinese Central Bank renewed those calls in 2013 after that year's U.S. government shutdown. So we know what they think, what they and why they're purchasing gold. And, you know, there's a lot of experts out there that believe China could buy a record 150 tons of gold this year. And I get this question asked me, well, if they're buying so much gold, then why isn't the price of gold going up?
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, it's paper trading. And knowing China, they've done it to the soybean markets. They do it with other commodities that they purchase. Guess what they do before they go in and buy it? They whack it.
Do you think they buy? They force it down.
They force it down. And then they go in and there and buy it. So it's you know, it's not a surprise. But the importance is that the desire to own it. And as I've always said, what they're going to do in order to stabilize world currencies, to keep countries from manipulating them to the degree that they do, they got to stabilize it. What's the best way to stabilize it? It's with gold. Are they going to have, they're going to have a trade, they're either going to have a trade unit involve gold, or what I believe they'll have the basket of currencies will be expanded. And gold will be in there maybe 10%, 20%. I don't know what the percentage is, and nobody else does either. But gold has to play a major part, and they'll put gold in there, and that'll stabilize, because gold, you have to have an accountability that you don't have with digits, fake digits, fiat currencies. So that's the only way they'll be able to stop them. You can slap on all the tariffs as you want if they mess with their currencies. That's not going to stop them. So, and we're probably one of the biggest riggers of the manipulating our currency. So, OPEC, you know, there's a big deal, Russia and the Saudis were supposed to meet. You had energies from some of the world's largest oil producers. They've agreed to deepen production cuts by an additional 500,000 barrels per day into March. Doesn't sound like a whole lot. OPEC and non-OPEC allies, often referred as the OPEC Plus, they had their biannual meeting in Vienna. Now this new deal, which is much larger than many analysts had expected, will see OPEC Plus reduced total output by 1.7 million barrels per day. The Energy Alliance has said its plans to review the policy at a special meeting on March 5th and 6th. So Brent crude futures remain around 15% lower when compared to April's peak, when the WTI down almost 12% over the same period.
Well, just briefly, in addition to that, Saudi Arabia's energy minister told reporters that the oil-rich kingdom's quota would be an additional 167,000 barrels per day again to March. OPEC's de facto leader, which is the Saudis, has been adamant that those that have been previously overproducing, like Iraq and Nigeria, have to comply with the group's quota. Russia's energy minister said Moscow's quota would be 300,000 barrels per day during the coming first quarter. Now, the Energy Alliance was prompted to act after global oil prices tumbled 5 years ago because of a big oil oversupply then. But U.S. shale producers are not a part of the deal, and shale oil supply has grown exponentially since then. U.S. is now the world's largest oil producer, 12.3 million barrels per day this year, and that's up 11 million barrels from just last year. The U.S. produces more oil than Saudi Arabia and Russia, in fact, although there are signs that production growth is slowing somewhat in the States. Now, along with an abundant supply of shale, falling demand due to this global economic slowdown and the trade wars has once again threatened to unbalance oil supply and demand dynamics, Melody.
Well, you know, as we speak, our blog and newsletter the blog at dgscoins.com. You can go there, sign up for the newsletter, and the blog is out as we speak. We got 3 minutes left of this segment. And Dave, you write about the U.S. continuing manufacturing slump. Can you tell us a little more?
Absolutely. Briefly, while business and consumer sentiment indicators have been inconsistent, jobs data and other governmental and corporate reports overall have been painting a picture of a U.S. manufacturing industry in growing distress. Timothy Fiori, who chairs the committee that oversees the monthly ISM survey that tracks manufacturing through the Purchasing Managers Index, known as PMI, said his report may be underestimating the damage. As we recently reported on Financial Survival, his company's latest report shows manufacturing contracting for the fourth straight month. It's somewhat of an unexpected decline. Most industry watchers had been expecting the index to rise.
We know there's several reports out there that have shown manufacturing output declining for over a year.
Well, that's true. The St. Louis Fed, and we show a graph in the blog that points this out starkly, shows a fairly steady fall since the middle of last summer. The ISM index sits at 48.1 for November, and as we know, anything under 50 on that reading indicates that manufacturing activity is declining. Now, through October, manufacturing had added just 2,000 net jobs in 2019. That was largely the result of a slowing pace of job growth from 2018's 264,000 manufacturing jobs added, but also to net job losses in the first 2 months of the fall, including a fairly substantial 36,000 net job loss in October.
Well, you see, that will give analysts some pause. What will give some analysts some pause is the Labor Department's November non-farm payrolls report.
Well, that's true, but let's remember over 41,000 of that figure, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is attributable to workers coming back from the GM strike, which ended in late October after 6 weeks of picket lines. Fiori said last month, "I think a lot of the manufacturing sector's layoffs are flying under the radar because no one wants to impact consumer sentiment. No one wants to announce cuts around Christmas." He added, "People are dropping shifts, they're canceling overtime, and they're sending temporary workers home." Now, I want to wait until the revised November job figures come out next month to gauge what I think is probably a more accurate current picture of manufacturing.
We're going to finish this up when we come back from break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen, and we're talking about the manufacturing, where people seem to be dropping shifts, canceling overtime, sending temporary workers home. And you go on to write that the Fed's latest beige book, which tracks businesses around the country, has a recurring theme.
It does. For one, the Richmond Fed reports that several retailers reported the tariffs were raising costs and hurting profit margins. The Dallas Fed noted that uncertainty generally remains elevated, driven by trade tensions, the political climate, and weaker global growth. And the St. Louis Fed, not to be outdone, says business contacts in retail and manufacturing reported facing increased price pressures due to tariffs. Now, even though there's some mixed messaging in here, we can see why many analysts have been arguing that U.S. manufacturing has been in the throes of recession for over a year. Remember, a recession is a period of temporary economic decline during which trade and industrial activity are reduced. That's generally identified by a fall in GDP in two successive quarters. Well, looking at the graph of manufacturing production, there's been more than two quarters of steady decline dating back to last August. Well, recessions are visible in industrial production and employment, real income, and wholesale retail trade, theoretically. Technically, a recession occurs only when the National Bureau of Economic Research says we're in one. And that's always, not sometimes or almost always, but always after one has already started. And usually it's 2 months out. So whether November's job report for manufacturing is an anomaly, you know, in an otherwise downward move, or whether it signals a reversal of last year's trend remains to be seen. We'll just have to wait to see what December brings, and January, and so on, and so on. So, when will other sectors follow manufacturing's prolonged malaise? Don't know. Perhaps Santa does. The rest of us, however, don't. In the meantime, however, look for ramped up economic uncertainty to keep upward pressure on gold.
Well, you know, we're hearing a lot of talk about the USMCA agreement and that it's just being stuck on Pelosi's desk. Nothing's, you know, it just needs to be signed and so forth. And but I guess there's part of that. I'm not quite sure exactly what I think about it yet, but the Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act protects online platforms from liability for content their users post. Now, is that what supposedly is holding this whole thing up?
It's not the whole thing, but it's the main thing that's holding it up.
So
they have to get Mexico. First, there has to be a policy decision among the leadership. And the White House has to agree, and then Mexico and Canada have to agree for this Section 230 provision.
But I thought Mexico had already ratified the USMCA. Supposedly, from what I read, they already ratified the agreement. It was just Canada.
Well, we're in talks with. We're in talks with both of them, I thought.
So who does this Section 230, I mean, what does it actually do? I mean, other than just keeping keeping the tech companies liability free.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Pelosi doesn't want that. I mean, and a number of members of Congress of both parties don't want that. They want to make the Facebooks, the Googles, and so forth liable for the content of their users' posts. And obviously, the tech companies want to extend their Section 230 protections. So, and it's, you know, the talk about lobbying and interest groups and applying political pressure in a Washingtonian sense. This is it. This is apparently a big one. That a lot of money being spent by big technology companies, a lot of pressure being brought to bear by certain donors of members of both parties. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
I don't know how they can, you know, really control something like, because, you know, if they extend liability there, whether they do or whether they don't, it affects everybody who has anyone posting anything on anyone's website. So, I mean, it's more than just the, it's just that those companies are the ones that get the, you know, the billions of hits on it and so forth. And you know, it's interesting because I have also been reading, maybe this is why this information is being released, where President Trump is spending a lot of money to Facebook on a lot of his campaigns. So, maybe that's one reason why maybe they're trying to force the issue. It's hard to believe that there's people out there who really think that everything they read on the internet is true. I mean, that just baffles me. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, if, you know, but, you know, I question myself. I guess people just don't critically think. They just don't have any critical thinking ability anymore. And so I don't know. You know, we were going to talk about the 5G being rolled out in 2020. And, you know, it started to arrive this year. And it's first you had to find a carrier that covered part of it in your city. And then you had to buy one of the handful of phones that supported the new network technology. Next year, that script is going to flip, as 5G support will be baked into a wide range of devices and networks, expand to cover more of the country. And every new generation of cellular technology has an awkward initial phase, but 5G is actually poised to arrive more smoothly than its predecessors. And here's what's driving this news, Dave. You have Qualcomm announced on Tuesday that its next high-end and mid-range chips will support 5G. That guarantees that many of next year's devices and nearly all flagship phones will support 5G. Amazing.
It is amazing. T-Mobile announced the launch of its nationwide 5G network on Monday, albeit using lower frequency spectrum that allows for broader coverage at the expense of the high speeds possible with this technology. T-Mobile, like other carriers, is also launching millimeter wave 5G in parts of large cities. Even those whose 5G networks rely entirely on short-range millimeter wave will be offering service in more cities next year. Verizon's 5G, for example, is in parts of 18 cities already, with plans to have 30 by the end of this year and a steady stream through 2020. AT&T, one of their senior VPs said 2020 is the pivotal year, noting that the company expects to launch around 15 devices, stretching from high-end phones to mid-range devices.
And you know, Apple is one, if not the question mark. It generally assumed that it settled long-running legal fight with Qualcomm earlier this year, in part to ensure next year's iPhone lineup and the offering of the 5G, Dave. But you know, it's. You know, the onus will still be on the industry to persuade consumers that they need 5G.
Yeah.
People are keeping their phones longer. They'll need to provide incentives for consumers in the market for a phone next year to buy a 5G device. I don't know what the cost is, but I'm assuming it would be a little bit higher, but or not.
I can't imagine it's going to be any cheaper. And with some unanswered questions about the health and safety impact of the 5G waves, I think there's some more research and communication with the public that needs to occur. I mean, I again, to the extent that we're in a stiff competition on a military and in intelligence level with China, and I guess to a lesser extent Russia, this is obviously an important technology. On the other hand, because we know that this is going to be used by tens of millions of just Americans through cellular devices and laptops and what have you, with these unanswered health questions, I think that's the crux here that's going to need to be better addressed. I mean, I let's not go fast just because it's available. Obviously, we can't go at a turtle's pace, but I think we can slow down on this until we get some of these questions answered.
Yeah, I agree. But the key thing is, everybody's looking for new phones. If it's automatically going to be included, are we even going to have an option to decline it?
Yeah, that's you're probably right.
So if anybody wants a new phone next year, you better get it this year. Right? Get the upgrade this year. Hey, Dave, I was wondering, if you could tell us a little bit on it about the retail drug prices being down and the overall health spending is up for the final report of the day. We got about 4 minutes left of the program, and this call just came in, and I really need to take it.
Absolutely.
So do you mind closing out the program?
Oh, and, absolutely not.
Dave, you keep going and finish out the program. I want to thank the listeners for joining us today. And we're here at 1-800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Melody. You know, you could have fooled me, ladies and gentlemen, but retail drug prices fell. They fell slightly last year for the first time in more than 40 years. At the same time, the cost of private health insurance grew at a rapid pace. That's according to a government study of healthcare spending. The study, which was produced by actuaries at the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that's part of the Department of Health and Human Services, shows a 1% decrease in retail drug prices for 2018. Now, that came as consumers relied more heavily on generic medicines, and prices rose relatively slowly for many brand name pharmaceuticals, which typically cost more to a lot more than generics. Still, while President Trump and members of Congress from both parties regard lowering drug prices as an important political cause, total expenditures on prescription drugs rose 2.5% last year to, listen to this, $335 billion. And overall health spending climbed 4.6% in 2018 to $3.6 trillion, accounting for nearly 18% of U.S. gross domestic product. In other words, healthcare expenditures amounted to about $11,200 per person in the U.S. One industry observer said that the slowing of drug price increases means that buyers are being smarter and more sensitive, looking for generic alternatives and other ways to avoid high-priced medicines. Still a lot more to go on that, though. He added that the polling this year very clearly shows that we're in a healthcare affordability crisis, and consumers are facing a big squeeze on their finances. A recent Fox News poll found that 53% of registered voters said the issue will be extremely important in their choice for president next November. That's about tied with the economy and higher than eight other major issues. This health study shows a continuing contraction of health coverage with about 1 million more people uninsured last year. That's about the same increase as the previous year. Now, the study also shows that the portion of health spending that consumers are directly responsible for, such as out-of-pocket costs for insurance deductibles, co-payments, and other fees, increased last year by just under 3%. That was slightly more rapid than a 2.2% increase in 2017. The cost per person for private health insurance rose last year by an average of 6.7%. That's the most rapid increase since 2004. Micah Hartman, who's the report's lead author, said the main reason for that increase is that Congress reinstated for 2018 an Affordable Care Act tax on health insurers that it had lifted the year before. He and other federal statisticians and economists couldn't say exactly how much of the increase that was caused by that tax. The drop in retail drug prices was the first since 1973. And it looks as though the program is ready to drop me. So I'm going to stop there and say thank you so much for listening. We'll be back on Monday. I'll be joining Melody. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Be safe. And bye-bye. I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy